So my big impossible right now.
So my impossible is...
My impossible.
The impossible.
I think the impossible...
An impossible dream that I think we could pull off one day would be...
I am Tansley Stearns, and this is Despite Impossible. I am a longtime credit union executive leading Community Financial as president and CEO. I have always admired and been inspired by people whose passion is boundless and who don't comprehend the word impossible. This show focuses on their stories. Today's guest is Rinaldo Hardy. He's a passionate leader, someone who is all about people, a gifted singer, and he considers himself to be a diplomatic disruptor. Rinaldo is also the president and CEO of NACUSO, the National Association of Credit Union Service Organizations, with a mission to help credit unions explore the delivery of non-traditional products and services. This is Rinaldo's story. People who know you best will describe you as?
All about the people. I am 100% for people, and people who know me best really know that. They also are the same people who try to encourage me to focus on myself at times, because that can be the struggle. But I really love what it feels like to be invested in the stories of other people.
What about today's version of yourself would impress your 10 years younger self?
To be honest, my physical fitness, I mean, 10 years ago, there's no way that I would have thought that I would be as committed to my health as I am. As a matter of fact, I was much larger at the time. So I had really accepted that this was just how it's going to be. You know, I was going to have extra weight on me. And I would even say to people that, oh, no, I've never been good at going to the gym, or I've never been able to be committed to lifting weights. I would say all of these things. And so it is so crazy to me now to see how committed I am. I lost the weight. I started the journey in 2017. I've been able to keep it off and have iterations of that. And I'm a gym rat now. And I would not have believed that 10 years ago. So that's what I would be very impressed with, that I'm actually committed to physical fitness.
What's your most unpopular music opinion?
Ooh, Beyonce is overrated. Now, I believe, I just did it. Okay, I do believe that she's insanely talented. Don't get me wrong. But because I am such a Brandy fan, like, I think it's so much to music. Yeah. In ways that her sound has shown up in almost every genre, somebody's mimicking her style. I'm committed to that part vocally, yeah, because I also sing. So to me, while Beyonce is talented, yeah, I think she's overrated. And I know that people will come for me for saying that. The Beehive will not like it.
That is the truth. When was the last time you danced so hard that your feet were sore?
Tansley, never. I am a terrible dancer. I have this conversation. I'm always like, come on, God, you let me sing. Like, why didn't you allow me to be able to dance? Because I feel like you need to do those things together. So, you know, every now and then I will move a little. Okay. But because I'm so bad at dancing, I would never be committed to dancing long enough that my feet will hurt. So,
All right.
Fun fact about Rinaldo. Terrible.
Okay. I didn't know that. What's the book, song, or movie that said the words you couldn't say?
You know, recently I read The 6 Working Types of Genius, and that book really communicated so well to me, because it not only spoke to the things that bring me joy, but it helped me to understand why other aspects of working do not. You know, there are things that you can commit yourself to doing, but over time, if you have to do those things routinely, they rob you of a joyful experience. And sometimes I would have struggles with that, you know, because of feeling like, well, I need to develop even stronger proficiencies around this. But reading that book was transformational for me. I've been telling everybody about it because it really gave language to what I love and why I'm good at it and why the other things are, you know, a struggle for me. So it said, I love invention and galvanizing, which is so true. I'm an ideas person. They come to me fast. They bring me joy. But then more importantly than having those ideas, I have a gift for and love for galvanizing people around those ideas to advance them. I guess hence being in a CEO role, those two things are very important. So that book did it for me.
Love. What gets an undeserved bad reputation?
Disruptors. Oh. And I mean, disruptors get such a bad reputation. People will be very excited on the other end of disruption. You know, once they get a chance to go through the journey of the disruption that brings them to delight, really, you know, that delightful experience, you know, they feel good about it. But encountering disruptive people, I have found, is a struggle for a lot of people to digest. So it can be very weird as well and hard to be disruptive. I consider myself diplomatically disruptive. And what that means, what that means is I've worked over time to understand the value of diplomacy so that I can make disruption a little more digestible. But I know you know that it gets a bad reputation. Mm-hmm. And if disruptors did not exist, we would be stuck in the same. We would never evolve. Innovation wouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
So while it's necessary, it's hard because it gets a bad. People can start. People redefine disruptive people or disruption as troublemakers. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing that someone you admire does?
So I have an amazing mentor, and he mentors me because he has a very similar background in that, you know, he's had this multifaceted purpose. So he was a pastor who was also a politician, who worked in the governor's administration, who's been a CEO, both on the for-profit and nonprofit side. So, you know, he's an amazing individual. And one of the things I love, he's now 68, and he is literally committed to launching something new every year. Like, he's taken on this position that he's never done with his journey. He's not retiring, but he's taking his next seat. And I admire that so much, because when I try to envision a world where I embrace traditional retirement, meaning that I've decided that maybe I'm not working anymore, like, I can't see that, because I'm so committed to investing all of my purpose and potential in this earth while I'm here. So I really get joyful about seeing his commitment to launching new things, and not just launching them, but launching them well, and also how he focuses on passing the baton and bringing others with him. I admire it so much.
Tell us about your impossible.
Tansley, you know, I thought about this, and leadership in itself is impossible. I'll answer it in this way. I was having a conversation last night with a younger man. Okay. So, like, I'm having this whole thing. I'm in my middle phase, right? So I'm having it with a younger man. And we were talking at the time about manhood and how it's interesting. He recently got married. And, you know, I talked about how, you know, this journey of getting married as a man, these responsibilities that you place on yourself, society places on you, and you begin to feel this immense amount of weight that I better know what I'm doing, because if all of this falls, everyone's going to be looking at me as the man. So it's like this tension point of this joyful experience of building this life that you go after, but that you are completely afraid of at the same time because of what it could mean if you mess up. I think leadership in itself is impossible. And what I mean is that it is impossible to reach a place that you will be without challenges. If you are thinking to yourself, I'm going to do this until I get to the point that, you know, the challenge is all gone, well, that's impossible. If you think, well, you know, I'm going to put this out here and everybody's going to love this idea. They're going to be so excited about it. And, you know, I'm not going to have to deal with the tension of anybody struggling to see the vision. Well, that's impossible. And, you know, what I've learned over time is that leadership is an acceptance of what is impossible, to journey towards the possibilities that do exist. Mm-hmm. And it is also helping to reveal possibilities to people and within people at the same time. So people discover what's possible because of the impact of quality leadership. But you and I know that so much of being a leader is accepting what is not possible. It is not possible to make everyone happy. It is not possible to make everyone see it. And it is not possible to reach a moment that no challenges exist. Because if that were the case, leaders would not be necessary.
What are some of the challenges you faced that seemed insurmountable at the time?
Oh, when I lost my mom. I lost my mom at 36. And I'll do my best to do this one without tearing up. But I never envisioned that in my story. And it's been weird. I was talking to my wife about what that looked like for me, because I saw this kind of recession of what each generation was able to see in my mom's lineage. And my great-great-grandmother saw me. I was a baby, like she saw me until the age of one, but she saw me. My great-grandmother, she then saw me until about 2 years before I got married. If she would have lived about 3.5 years more, she would have seen her great-great-grandchild, but she didn't. And then my grandmother, you know, she saw her great-grandchild, but our children, but she didn't see them become adults like my great-grandmother did. And then my mom saw her grandchildren, but she didn't see them grow up. And so that was weird for me to try to have that wrestling with what it has looked like generationally to have this receding existence. And to be very frank, wondering where I would be in that story. And beyond that, you know, trying to figure out, because for the first time, you know, I feel like I've been known for a certain amount of resiliency. Ooh, but Tansley, it knocked the wind out of me. And for the first time, it felt like something was going to win. I did not feel like I could rise above that. I did not feel like I could figure out life without her. I could not see 40 more years of existence without her being there. I could not picture succeeding and experiencing quality moments without her being there to cheer me on. I could not see any of it. And suddenly, to me, nothing really had meaning. Because someone who meant so much to me, who I felt that I was doing some of it for, like I was doing it to make her, now I'm really gonna cry, to make her proud. I was doing it for that reason, because she was everything to me. And that felt insurmountable. It really did. It felt impossible to me to live in a world without her.
I'm grateful you shared that with us. You may have just answered this, and I'll ask, was there a point during your journey when you felt like giving up?
Oh, my Lord, I really did. So that kind of opened a very painful journey for me. And after that, remembering that what I said earlier is I'm for the people, I'm about people.
Yeah.
So I started navigating that grief. At the same time, I started experiencing some pain from people I loved, right? So some very close relationships to me, people who had opened my heart up to hurt me during that season in multiple ways. Some couldn't journey through grief. Some had their own challenges going on at the time that I didn't expect to, you know, encounter that pain. In hindsight, I think also just where I was and how heavy the journey was for me. People were used to seeing the joyful version of me and seeing me in this other state that I really felt very little control of, or that I had little control of. It became difficult. So I navigated pain from that experience. I went through personal, professional, and spiritual pain. You know, I went through a very difficult situation involving my brother after that. And it opened up so much in me to see the parts of people that would be hurtful to me. Not to say I had never experienced pain from people. I don't want to make it seem like, man, you were in your late 30s before you knew that could happen. But when you are an empath and when you are invested in people and when you give all of your heart to that, and you're dealing with that pain also while dealing with this very big life circumstance that you did not foresee, and it feels like all the noise is coming from everywhere. I wanted to give up. Mm-hmm. I really did. I was like, you know what? Why? Like, why are you even doing it all? Like, why do you give your all to, you know, the things you're passionate about? Why are you so, you know, filled with, you know, this desire for watching your purpose completely unfold and doing the same for others? Why do you sign up for pain? Because in order to extend love, right? In order to extend love, it's an invitation for pain. And so I was really wrestling with why I do all the things I do, whether it was personal, whether it was in my professional context, whether it was spiritual. You know, I'm in ministry. Why am I doing these things if they're so hard? Why am I doing these things if the ugly parts of people sometimes show up? Mm-hmm. And the response was always because this is what you enjoy. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I'm okay with accepting a certain amount of pain. To experience the joy that comes from when those moments do really matter and when they mean something, when we get good things done. So.
Yeah. What's one thing you've learned about yourself while going through your impossibility?
That the resilience that I had developed could be trusted. That it really could be trusted. Like, I think that before hitting those levels of impossibility, there was a measure of resilience that I had grown to love about myself. My parents were, their bounce back, you know, ability was so strong, and they taught us to be like that. They just, it was just interwoven in how we were raised. So I was accustomed to having this sense of fight in me that nothing would really keep me down. And then when I got to that moment, I didn't trust the resilience initially. I did not trust that resilience. I felt, and I said, I was like, this might be the one time. Like, this might be the thing. This might be the time that I can't get back up. This may be the time that people lose that example. That, you know, some people have looked to me as an example for their own resiliency. And this might be the time that they lose that example. But fighting through it, I learned to trust it. And the other thing I will say is that I learned that on the other side of the most difficult parts of our journey are typically the most beautiful experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm living in one now. Mm-hmm. Like, I look at the season I'm in and, you know, I have the most joyful job at this point. Like, I love where I am in my career and what I'm doing. That's on the other side of that pain. You know, I was sitting and reflecting recently. My wife and I, we moved into a new home, something that, I mean, as a child, come on. I mean, just this would have been a dream. And I was wrestling, or I say not wrestling, but in reflection recently, because I think 40 is probably one of the first biggest moments of reflection. I know it's not the final, but at this moment at 40, I'm like looking back and being like, oh wow, like thinking about what I thought it would be and what it is. And I was having this moment in my backyard where I'm experiencing this full grown man and mature version of myself and experiencing the 8-year-old boy and me at the same time. Mm-hmm. And see, Don, you're going to make me choke up on this. But the 8-year-old boy was looking at what the 40-year-old man was sitting in and thinking to himself, it was possible. Because as a kid, it was a dream. And I was saying this last night in the same conversation to the young man. I talked about this whole tension of disbelief and belief at the same time. That you could be insanely driven because you believe that it's possible while still nurturing and overcoming this part in you that's like, but is it really going to happen? So it's like, and when I said it to him, I was like, you know, there's a part of me that's like, it's definitely going to happen. And that's why I'm going after it while I'm asking myself, but will it really? And he laughed because he was like, I totally understand exactly what you just said. And I think very many, many accomplished people or leaders would say the same, that's the part of us that people don't see, that you have that drive. You're like, oh, I'm going to give it my all. Nothing's going to stop me because this can happen. But at the same time, you're like, but will it really happen? So anyway, I learned to trust that resilience in me, but I also learned to just keep embracing that on the other side of the most difficult moments are often the most beautiful outcomes and experiences.
What's your advice for folks to face their fear of inaction and use that fire in their bellies to bring their impossible dreams to life?
I'll say it like this. It won't happen unless you get started. At the end of the day, it really won't happen unless you get started. And I read something about this recently that most of the most highly successful people are actually those who get started without having all the details figured out. Mm-hmm. And that feels crazy to a lot of people. It didn't feel crazy to me at all, because I can think of times that I'm like, okay, I got enough to get going.
Yeah.
And while we're going, I'll pick up the rest, right? And I think what happens to a lot of people is they're trying to wait for everything, every detail, every factor to be perfect in order to get started. And it won't happen unless you get started. What I learned is that over time, because of being that way, there were things about myself that I could begin to trust. So now I do trust my gut above anything. And I've said to others, you know, what I have seen over time is that 97% or so, maybe 95, anywhere, somewhere around that percentage, it's right.
Yeah.
And so nobody's going to get it right 100% of the time. So I accept the 3 to 5% margin of error.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with knowing that I'm going to get it wrong sometimes, because I get it right most of the time. And I think that that's true of most people, and they don't learn that about themselves because they don't get started. So it won't happen unless you get started. And over time, learn to trust your gut. It most of the times won't steer you wrong.
What do you look forward to most in the next 12 months?
I really look forward to, from a professional perspective, I am looking forward to what Nikuso is about to do. I have loved the journey of coming into this organization. We have done a really good job reimagining ourselves. We've been telling a story to the industry and keeping the industry connected to where we're going. And there's so much excitement and such a groundswell around what we're doing. And for me, I'm like, we really are only getting started. Like, we haven't even done all of the things. And so knowing what's coming and what's ahead, I'm excited about what that's going to look like. And more importantly, the opportunities that we will help to unearth in credit unions as a result of it. You know, when I think about the work that we will be doing in every part of our ecosystem that's represented, at the end of the day, it's increasing opportunities for our credit union industry as we move forward. And the ultimate outcome happens to be the lives that get to be changed in every community that's impacted by that work. So I'm excited. I can tell you it's going to be a joyful journey to watch. So stay tuned. I mean, we got a lot ahead, and I can't wait to see what it's going to look like.
What's your next impossible, my friend?
My next impossible is very practical. Stewarding my kids to their dreams while trying to omit my own. All right. So, like, oh, I know I just probably had a lot of parents to understand what that means. My kids are getting older, and that's so scary to me. This year, my third child will also become a teen. So I have three teenagers. My oldest will turn 16 and become a junior. So we are beginning that journey of, okay, what college are you going to be going to? What are you looking like for your career? And I have to have this balance of gentle nudging, right, in terms of what I believe could help them be more successful in what it is that they want to do. But it does, it feels almost impossible to prepare myself for that release, that I have a responsibility to really help to steward them to their own dreams and really do my best to omit mine, making sure that it's not more important to me that they become a reflection of what I saw for them and that they become more of a reflection of what they see for themselves. So, you know, I may need some cheering on along the way, because, you know, as many parents do, I think that we feel we know best. And I'm going to have to trust along the way that they will ultimately know best what's right for them. And I might know better what may help them to get what's right for them and navigating the two.
Who's someone else that should share their story with us, Ronaldo?
Shirley Sien. I really like Shirley Sien. I got a chance to work with her at CU Strategic Planning. Yeah. And she is such an interesting person. She has such an interesting story. And she's very, very passionate about her work. And I think that her story should be shared for sure.
Are disruptors troublemakers? I do think that there is often an angst that disruptors cause people to feel. I don't see disruptors as troublemakers, and I do understand that if you are someone that sparks change, you can cause people to feel a lot of anxiety, and the emotions that come from anxiety can lead people to have very negative opinions of somebody that is sparking change. So vulnerability and leadership, I actually don't believe that leaders are often as vulnerable as they should be. I think it takes a lot of courage to show vulnerability. And I can speak for myself. I was raised as a leader to, you know, my first mentor, John Normando, used to say there's no crying in credit unions. I think the basis of leadership in the 90s and 2000s and certainly before, especially before, was about strength as leadership. And I think that the idea of vulnerability in leadership is very new. And, you know, we spent some time with our leaders recently talking about the idea that we'll no longer use the word soft skills, but power skills. And I am a firm believer that vulnerability matters. It is important. And it's also nuanced, right? What you do not wish to do is running around pouring out your heart all day, every day. And there's also this balance that I think people do expect their leader to have a level of strength. And I have had leaders ahead of me before that wanted to talk about how hard things were for them. And that can be difficult too, because there is a real responsibility as a leader that you have to owning what those challenges are. So it's super nuanced, and I think it's a very razor thin line. What I would say for myself, I think everybody's got to choose this path of vulnerability in the way that makes sense for them. For myself, I'd rather err on the side of having been too vulnerable than having been too polished, because I do think some of the coaching I got in the last 5 years has been about the fact that being too polished cause people to not see me as a real human being. Is Beyonce overrated? No, I have to disagree with Ronaldo. This is why we ask people about their opinions about music that are unpopular. And listen, I appreciate people's boldness. I think that, again, Beyonce, in a similar way, although different from Taylor Swift, has massive talent. And again, as a woman, I really respect the space that Beyonce creates and the leadership that she holds. And I can't say for a minute that she's overrated.
This concludes today's episode. For exclusive content, visit us at despiteimpossible.com and subscribe to this podcast.